Talmud tells us that the source for Esther is the verse in the Bible, Anochi Haster Aster Panai Mikem, I will hide my face from you. The book of Esther is a book that's filled with mysteries, with hidden secrets of the fate and destiny of the Jewish people. I would like to deal with a couple of questions relating to some of the episodes in Megillat Esther that seem to be a little bit out of place. For example, the party of Ahasuerus. Why is it important for us to know about the party of Ahasuerus? Why couldn't the book of Esther start with the selection of Esther to be the queen of Persia? Why must we know the details of the party in which Vashti was condemned to death? Why is that significant and important? And I'd like to give two answers which sort of emphasize the significance and importance of that party. One is related to the last chapter of Megillat Esther. The last chapter of Megillat Esther, the Megillah tells us that Ahasuerus levied a tax on the land and on the islands of the sea. Vayasam ha-melech Ahasuerus masal ha-aretz ve'al iyei hayam. Why was it important for us to know that Ahasuerus levied a tax? The main point of Megillat Esther is the story of Mordechai and Esther and Haman and Ahasuerus and how the Jewish people were saved from annihilation, from genocide. Who cares about Ahasuerus's tax policies? It would seem to be irrelevant. And that brings us back to the party. Ahasuerus becomes the king of Persia, and he makes a party for 180 days. It's almost inconceivable that a person could have a party for 180 days. We who live in an age of opulence, of some forms of conspicuous consumption, we go to nice parties, but a party of 180 days, and then another party of 7 days, and with all the decorations and all the drinking and all the goblets and all of the accoutrements that are associated with that party, it must have cost the Empire of Persia and the Medes, Paras and Madai, a fortune. Ahasuerus then makes another party when Esther becomes queen. And that party is, again, a party with pomp and ceremony, and not only with pomp and ceremony, but the Megillah tells us, V'hanachal ha-medinot asah, he also did away with taxes. He gave people tax relief by eliminating taxes. And eventually, essentially, what had to happen over the course of time with such a free-spending king is that the king was presiding over a bankrupt empire. Now, in this world, the Jewish people, unfortunately, have enemies. And anti-Semitism rears its ugly head in many different forms. There are some people who are social anti-Semites. They don't particularly hate Jews in the sense that they would be out l'hashmid, l'harog, l'abay to kill, but they just don't like Jews because they were told that Jews are not pleasant characters. And then there are those who are rabid anti-Semites, people who want to destroy the Jews, like Haman, like Hitler, like Arafat, two kinds of anti-Semites. The social anti-Semite certainly would not commit an act of genocide. But when Haman was elevated to the point of viceroy of Persia, and he decided that he wanted to destroy the Jews because he didn't like Mordechai, he told Ahasuerus, Yeshno am echad, mefuzar meforad bein ha'amim. There is a nation that's scattered throughout the 127 provinces who practice a different religion, and I would like to do away with them. Im al ha'melech tov yikasev li abadam. And you could just imagine the conversation at that point when Haman pauses, the king's eyes widen in surprise and shock. The king would never do it because, after all, it just wouldn't look good. How do you kill an entire nation of people? Hundreds of thousands or perhaps millions of people. Couldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. But then Haman said, V'aseret alafim kikar kesef eshkol al yidei oseh hamlacha lahavi al ginzei hamelech. And I will bring 10,000 ingots of silver to restore the treasury of the king. At that point, Ahasuerus blinks. And Ahasuerus is willing to accept Haman's bargain and deal. Although he wants to keep his hands as far away from it, he says, listen, hakesef nasun loch, you'll handle it. I don't want to touch it. But you could do it. And so, in effect, what we have is the Jewish people being set up to become the scapegoats of Haman with the permission of Ahasuerus because the king simply had bankrupted his empire. And ultimately, Mordechai, who becomes the viceroy after the defeat of Haman, recognizes exactly what happened. And he sees in his responsibility as viceroy of Egypt the obligation to make sure, as viceroy of Persia, the obligation to make sure that never again will happen what had happened in the time of Haman and Ahasuerus, namely to eliminate the possibility, to eliminate the excuses to destroy the Jewish people. And so therefore, what does Mordechai do? He advises the king to levy taxes, to restore the economy of Persia, so that a man like Haman can't stand up to another ruler and say, listen, the economy is bad, let's kill the Jews to save the economy. And that's why the Megillah tells us that the greatness of Mordechai is also described in the chronicles of the kings of Persia and Madai, because it was Mordechai who was the one who advised the king to levy those taxes. And therefore, we're told at the very end of the Megillah, after we're told about the taxes of Achashverosh, Ki Mordechai HaYehudi Mishneh LaMelech Achashverosh. It was Mordechai who was the viceroy and who was good for the Jewish people and thought about the future. So that's one explanation as to why we have to know about the party. Because the party was that which contributed, in part, to the plot of Haman and to the eventual annihilation of the Jews. But for the grace of God, the Hashgacha Pratis and the work of Mordechai and Esther would have happened. But then there's another explanation for the party, and I think it's important to take note of that. A party for 180 days is a very exaggerated party. In fact, it's a party that's made Keshevas HaMelech Achashverosh al Kisei Malchuso, when the king Achashverosh sat on the throne, Bishnas Shalosh L'Malcho, in the third year of his reign. Well, if it was when the king sat on his throne, so why does it take place in the third year of his reign? And the answer is, as Chazal say, that Achashverosh was a commoner who became king, a stable hand who became king. He wasn't really deserving of the title king, but somehow he was able to usurp the royalty. And for the first 3 years of his ascent to power, he wasn't really in a stable position. He wasn't really in control. In the third year, when he felt a sense of control, he decided to demonstrate to his kingdom and to the world that he was the king. And kings make parties. But since he was a commoner, and he had no concept of court etiquette, of how to conduct himself in an appropriate manner, what Achashverosh did was made a party. But a party that was so exaggerated, so absurd, so ridiculous, 180 days, and then another 7 days, and free drinks for everyone, and goblets which were different for everyone, and all of the decorations and the decor of the party. It was absurd and ridiculous. But here's an insecure man trying to exercise his control and to demonstrate to the world that he indeed is fit to be a king. And then Achashverosh summons the queen Vashti. He calls Vashti the queen, Vashti HaMalkah, to come to the party to show off her beauty. A group of drunken old men wanted to see the queen appear without her clothes. But as the Malbim points out, it is HaMalkah Vashti who refuses to come. Because Vashti was the daughter and granddaughter of royalty. She came from a real royal family. Her father was a king. Her grandfather was Nebuchadnezzar. He was a king. She was trained in the manner, the ways of court. She wasn't going to appear naked in front of those drunken men. And she refuses. Why did he want to show off Vashti? Because again, Vashti was another stamp of approval. After all, even though he was a commoner, he married a princess. And Vashti's refusal sort of flies in the face of Achashverosh's authority. An insecure king who is insulted and who is undermined by the refusal of the queen takes dramatic action, and he puts his queen to death. And it's at that point in time that he has to search for another queen. And it's at that point in time that Esther becomes the queen of Persia. Well, shortly after Esther's appointment as queen, and Mordechai, who sits in the gate of the court of the palace of Achashverosh, uncovers the plot of Bigson and Seresh. Nothing could be worse for an insecure man like Achashverosh. A plot of two people, of two servants who want to kill him, who want to assassinate him. And Achashverosh withdraws into a cocoon. He stays in the palace. No one can come to see him unless summoned by the king and unless the king holds out the royal scepter. He sets up a double to serve as a viceroy, somebody who's elevated above all the other officers. Never before had this been done in Persia and Madai. And that man is Haman, who acts as if he's the king, who represents the king in everything. And Achashverosh is hiding inside of his palace. And so when Haman is successful in getting his decree promulgated, Mordechai finds out, because he sits outside of the palace, he finds out before Esther. And when he tries to persuade Esther that it was her job to go before Achashverosh to save the Jews, that's why she was chosen to be queen. And Esther says to Mordechai, I can't do it, because everybody knows that you can't go to the king. The king is in isolation. I haven't been called for 30 days. And if I go, I'll lose my life. because that's the king's new rule. That's the king's new security. And Mordechai says, you have to go. And so Esther says, okay, pray for me, and I will go. And sure enough, Be'ezras Hashem, with the help of God, Esther enters, and she arrives safely. And Esther comes up with a plan, with a brilliant plan, to play on the king's insecurity and to use it to save the Jewish people. Because she, like Mordechai, has figured it all out. And so what does she do? She invites the king and Haman to a party that she's making. It's a rather odd request. The king has never been invited to a party made by the queen together with one man, just with Haman. And perhaps you'd be curious, why is the queen inviting Haman to this party? And when they come to the party, Esther says to Ahasuerus, who offers her up to half the kingdom, whatever she wants. And her request is, come tomorrow to another party together with Haman, and then I'll tell you. Ahasuerus now has to begin wondering, the insecure Ahasuerus that is, why is the queen inviting me with Haman? What's between the queen and Haman? In fact, he's so troubled by that question that night he couldn't sleep. He simply couldn't sleep. What was he thinking about? He was thinking about Esther and Haman. Esther and Haman. What's between the queen and Haman? And with a little help of God, they bring in the chronicles. And what do they read to the king as a bedtime story, which is to help him fall asleep, the insomniac king? They read him from the chronicles of the plot of Bigson and Seresh and how Mordechai saved the king. The insecure king now hears more about plots against him. And he asks what happened to Mordechai as a result of that. And he was told nothing. And just then Haman comes into the palace at an odd hour. And the king says, who's mi b'chatzer? Who's in the courtyard? And they said, it's Haman. And he says to Haman, what should we do to a person who the king wants to give honor to? And Haman thinks aloud to himself, who but me would the king want to give honor to? And so he says the person should be dressed in royal clothing and should ride on the royal horse. And there should be a crown, either on the man or on the horse. It's not clear, but whatever it is, royal garments. And Ahasuerus undoubtedly knows that Haman is thinking about Haman. But of course, Ahasuerus is thinking about Mordechai. But again, it reinforces his suspicions. And the next day, after Mordechai rides on the horse, led by Haman through the streets, and Haman comes home, really depressed, his wife tells him, it's the beginning of the end for you. They are hurried off to the party, the second party of Esther, Ahasuerus, and Haman. And the king now says to Esther, up to half the kingdom, my dear queen, whatever you want. And it's at this point that Esther says, I would have kept silent and said nothing to you if my people were to be enslaved. But my people have been written off. My people have been sentenced to death by an evil man. And the king says, who is that evil man? And Esther says, it's the evil Haman who's sitting here at this party. And Ahasuerus, in a fit of anger, runs to the garden. And he comes back, and Haman has fallen on Esther's couch to plead with Esther. But it looks like Haman is trying to do something else with Esther. And the king immediately lets out of his mouth the phrase, Hagam lichboshet hamalka imi babayis, have you come to capture the queen with me in the house? And immediately Charvona says, you know, the tree that Haman has prepared to hang Mordechai is in his backyard. And the king says, well, why don't you hang Haman on it? And immediately Haman is hanged. What you have over here, with the details of the party, which are only an expression of the insecurity of a man who should not have been king, a commoner who rose to the heights of royalty, but who was so insecure, and who had to celebrate in such an absurd way, who couldn't secure his kingdom until the third year that he was in power, and who made an exaggerated party, and another one, and then murdered his queen because she wouldn't show off for him. This insecurity is the very insecurity which Esther plays up to. After the king has isolated himself in fear of the plot of Bigson and Seresh and has replaced himself with Haman to front for the king, Esther uses that very same insecurity to make the king suspicious of Haman and to turn the tables on Haman, and thereby, through guile and through good political intrigue, and with the Hashgacha of Hashem Yisbarach, with God's help, bring victory to the Jewish people over their evil enemy. And so what seems to be an extraneous detail of the story of the Megillah, the party of Esther, the party of Ahasuerus, rather, the party that lasted 180 days and the next party that lasted 7 days, becomes a very significant detail, a significant detail that explains to us why the Jews were sentenced to death because of the economic problems that the king brought upon himself by splurging and spending in an irresponsible way. It explains that. And it also explains to us how Esther was able, through natural means and through using a clever plan and using the king's insecurity, was able somehow to defeat Haman in a game of chess at which the stakes were the survival of the Jewish people for all time. Thank you very much.